welcome back to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. This is episode 40, and I'm your host, Andy Godoy. Now guys, today's episode is going to be slightly different. We're going to do it in a number of different parts. The main part of the podcast will be in about 10-15 minutes, and that is the part that we recorded, the podcast we recorded at Revival with the community and the Retro Asylum team. And I tell you what, it was a fantastic weekend. Really, really enjoyed that. Now, before I go into that, I just want to say a few special thanks, and I want to give a few mentions to a few people that have tweeted to me about some exciting things that are happening in the retro gaming. First things first, then, I want to start off the whole podcast by saying a big special thanks to Chris Wilkins for creating such an amazing event. It was absolutely amazing. It was absolutely perfect, basically. I've been to quite a few of these retro gaming events, and this is probably has to be one of the best ones I've actually ever been to. The whole atmosphere was amazing. But like I said, I'll talk more a little bit about that in a few moments. I just want to say, Chris, and to the rest of the team behind this, you guys did like an extraordinary job. You know, it was perfect. 10 out of 10, I give you guys for that. Now, I also want to give a big special thanks to Steve from joysticktraders.co.uk. Now, I mentioned him in the last podcast, but I got to meet him at the Revival event. Really nice guy. And basically, check out the website if you're into collecting retro games. Why not check his site out? It's basically like an auction site. It's for retro games by a retro gamer, and that is Steve. So why not sign up and join up at joysticktraders.co.uk. Now, the next thing I want to talk about, and again, guys, I want to apologize if this bit is a bit on the fly, but I'm recording this, it's Thursday night, the show has to be out Friday morning, real life has really been kicking me up the backside. The podcast that we did record at Revival is fantastic, so I do apologize about me just rambling on, but I want to plug and promote a few people, things first of all. Now, the first thing I want to plug is two Kickstarter projects. The first one is called The Nest Club, and it's basically one guy. He's got 30 days to try and find over 700 NES games. So if you can back him up, I think he wants £15,000. Dollars, I should say, and 2014 have been donated so far, and he's got 28 days to go, so definitely give this a go. Go to Kickstarter's, find it. It's called The NES Club, one man, 30 days, over 700 games to find. It's definitely worth checking out, and hopefully I'll get this guy on the podcast. Sorry, my phone's going there because I'm looking it up here. Right, so let's have a look at the next project then. The next project is something I'm really into myself as well. It's NSP, Changing the Way We Play Video Games. Okay, so basically this guy is building a community for gamers, basically. So he wants to build up like a proper venue, like a proper setup where people can come out and hang out and play games. And I think it's a fantastic idea. And he's basically wants £10,000. At the moment, you know, he's had no donations or anything. I think he's just pretty much just started it. He's got 27 days to go. So if you'd like, you know, like a place to go to play games, then this is a perfect project for you guys to check out. So go to Kickstarter, go to Changing the Way We Play Video Games. It's by someone called NSP. Right, so I've plugged a few little things there. What I want to do then, I want to quickly tell you my view of Revival. Now, it was a great weekend. It started on the Saturday. Dean picked me up, I think, around 5:30. He said he wasn't going to pick me up around 6 o'clock, so I was actually awake. I was really excited that morning. I couldn't sleep properly, and plus my cat had gone missing, which put me in a little bit of a downer for the first part of the day anyway, but I'll get onto the retro gaming side. So Dean picked me up, and we just sort of like drove down. It was a long journey because, you know, we live out in Essex, and we had to go down to Wolverhampton. So it took us at least about 3 and a bit hours, but it was nice just sort of like hanging out. We were both really excited about the event. We talked about what sort of machines we would like to see, what we were expecting. And I'll tell you what, I was expecting something very similar to Play, but I found it a lot better. And I'll go into why it was a lot better a little bit later on. It just, I honestly thought it was going to be pretty much the same, but it had a different character altogether. But anyway, so we must have got to Revival about 9 o'clock, and we organised to meet up with Foggy and Simon. Now, Foggy is one of our co-hosts, and Simon, as you may remember, he basically did our podcast with Foggy a few weeks ago, and it's a fantastic episode. And he's also submitted an episode of the auditions, which, guys, I do say, please, you know, check him out. Please support all these guys that are doing the auditions. We've had about 7 or 8 of them now, and all of them are fantastic. So yeah, we met up with Simon, Foggy, and I think when me and Dean got to the car park, we basically heard someone going, "Andy, Dean," and we were like, "Huh? Who's this?" And he was like, "Oh, it's me, Joe. Dig Dougler from the forum." It's like, yeah, it's kind of hard to sort of like put a face to actually someone that you've just met on the forum, basically. But I tell you what, meeting Joe, really nice guy, really down to earth. So we went down to the venue itself. We couldn't check into the hotel because we got there so early. Check-in wasn't until like about 2 o'clock. So we went in. I think we were waiting for Anthony, also known as Uniforex, and he was coming down with his little boy. And I think he was queuing up, and we had gotten in earlier on because we had the press passy. So we were sitting down by the bar, having a few drinks, and then we spotted Anthony because he had a Retro Asylum t-shirt. And yeah, it was really nice that quite a few of the community members wore the Retro Asylum t-shirt. Glenn didn't arrive until a little bit later on, but I tell you what, from the moment we walked into this venue, it was just... it was different, like I said, to Play Expo. Not knocking Play Expo, I love Play Expo, but Revival just felt that something a little bit special. It felt like you're going into an arcade. It felt like you're going into a friend's house and playing these machines, because everything was just there. Everything was just so relaxed. You could talk to people that were playing games. It focused a lot more on retro games as opposed to sort of like more modern stuff like Play does. But I loved the atmosphere. I loved the building that it was in. It was just absolutely perfect. You know, perfect size, wasn't too big. Loads of different systems. And one of the things which I did like, it had loads of different shops, loads of different vendors that sell different sort of products. And we will cover that on the main part of the podcast. We sort of go into a discussion about that. But yeah, I want to give one special thanks to someone else as well. He had like a shop there and he was selling beads. I'm just trying to remember what his name is. Okay, if you go into Facebook and put in a beads see start... and I loved what this guy did. This guy, basically, with beads, he created sprite-style graphics. So you could do a Dizzy, you could do Mario, Yoshi, Street Fighter characters. This guy had loads of different things. I mean, I couldn't help it, and I had to buy a Dizzy. And I think later on, he also sold some stuff to the Oliver Twins, or maybe he gave them some. So check out this guy's site, A Beads Sea Star, on Facebook. You know, really nice guy. I think his name is James. Like his page on Facebook and check out his amazing stuff. And hopefully in the next couple of weeks as well, we will be working with James. He's going to give us some beads. He's going to create us, I think, a Dizzy, a Sonic and Mario that he's done. It must take him ages to do this, so I really appreciate that. He's going to give those as a prize. And somewhere down the line, we're going to announce a competition and you guys can win this. So yeah, big thanks to James for that. So yeah, overall, a view of the event, I loved it. It was fantastic. Maybe I did get a little bit too retroed out because, you know, I was there for the weekends. But overall, I think it's one of the best events I've actually ever been to. And thinking back by it, I enjoyed every single minute of it. It was amazing. Now, guys, I do apologise if I am rambling on. I'm just a little bit tired. I've been editing the main part of the podcast, which is coming up in about a minute. I really hope you enjoy this. I mean, I had an amazing time at the event, meeting our community, meeting people that listen to our show. One of the highlights for me was meeting, I think it's at TMC. He was there with his wife and his little boy. You know, we're all sitting down and he came up to us. He said hello, shook our hands. Really nice guy, absolutely fantastic. Great meeting the whole community, great mingling with other podcasts, great mingling with other people at the event. It was so nice. And I tell you what, rather than rambling on, sit back and enjoy this episode of the Retro Asylum podcast. And yeah, enjoy. Goodbye.
Hello everyone and welcome back to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, the Retro Asylum. This is episode 40. I'm your host, Andy Godoy, and come on guys, introduce yourselves.
Dean Swine.
Foggy.
Simon. LCFC.
Right, so we're basically here at Revival in Wolverhampton. It's been a fantastic day. We're going to do a slightly different sort of podcast this time. Rather than do like an in-depth podcast, we're doing sort of like a round-the-table discussion about our views on gaming, the event, and just generally everything. So it's not going to be as well planned or as organised or as heavily edited as it normally is. Right, okay, so what have you thought of the event then?
The event has been great. I think it's much more what I'm into. It was a lot more computing than gaming, rather than it just being consoles. Not so much modern stuff, although there was a Halo competition. Just much more 8-bit and early 16-bit, like Amiga ST scene. So yeah, much more my cup of tea.
What about yourself then, Foggy?
Well, it's better than Geek, wasn't it?
Yeah,
because yes, but they said it's much more 8-bit and much more my generation of gaming. And there's some machines that are really old there, and I don't know how they managed to get them down there and set them up and be happy to let people play on them, because some of them are pretty getting them for antiques, aren't they?
You know? I mean, some of them are in a pretty fragile state as well, some of them arcades.
Good selection of arcade machines.
Yeah, definitely.
You said it was better than Geeks. In what ways was it better? I mean, like better organised, more machines?
Both, really.
The venue's
better, there's more stuff on sale, and it's a different sort. You know, there's certain stalls where it's got all your console stuff, and if you're into that thing, there's Amstrads on sale, Spectrums, Commodore 64s, there's the games for those formats as well, there's everything there.
Right, I want to move on to that a little bit, actually. We talked about this before we started recording, but I just want to get Simon's view on the event so far, what you thought of it. Have you been to one before like this?
No, this is actually my first event, so yeah, and it's been excellent. It's I like the fact that it has got a heavy sort of 8-bit, early, mid-80s sort of leaning. A lot of the old arcade machines as well. I mean, there was a Mr. Do there, a Tron, original Tron arcade machine. So yeah, it's been fantastic.
What's your view on the shops and the selection of things they've got? Because at Play Expo, who do they normally have down there?
It's Console Passions, their main outlet.
Yeah. And what I found here, it's different sort of shops, and they've got different variations on different systems. Some may sort of have more Mega CD games, others might have more 8-bit sort of computer games. So what's your view on what shops have you liked so far?
Well, the thing that got me was, especially when we first turned up, there was a lot more. I mean, a lot of it got sold during the day, but a couple of stalls had a bit of a car booty feel to them.
Yeah,
some bits of tat, but there was also some decent stuff there, and it got snapped up pretty much straight away. There was the GCL Invaders handheld. I think that was going for about a tenner. More straight away.
You weren't tempted to pick it up?
I was tempted, but not straight away. I didn't want to blow my money on stuff, you know. I went to have a look around first, and then you go back to the store and it's gone, and you're kind of gutted, but there you go, that's one of those things.
Alright, Sunday morning now, so how much have you spent so far while you've been at this event?
On games, I've spent £15. I've bought three things, which was it Pitfall 2 for the Atari 2600, hopefully it's the PAL version, so the colours display correctly. PS2's Capcom collections, which is all the old arcade games. And what else did I buy? Virtua Racing on the Mega Drive.
Okay, so a nice selection of games. What about yourself then, Darren? What shops have you enjoyed looking at, and what have you bought so far?
I thought there was Amibay had a stall, didn't it?
Yeah.
Didn't they? And the good thing about that is they didn't necessarily want you. Well, obviously they wanted your money, but they just said make an offer for anything you want.
Yeah.
Because all the profits were going to fund their site. So
yeah,
I thought that was quite refreshing, because usually, I mean, there were some stores wanting £50 for a bog standard game. I won't say it is, but some people just
trying to charge top whack.
Yeah, taking advantage of the event in that way. But I bought Ultima 4, was it? So I can't remember what I bought there.
Ultima 5
on the Amiga with a cloth map.
Got to love the
coins. The coin as well.
And all the extras. And what else did I get from there?
Do you know, I've
drawn a blank.
I can't remember what it was now.
Arma 5 and...
But you got a nice selection then. What we'll need to do at some point is have a picture of you holding the cloth map.
Holding the cloth map. My missus can have it as a tea towel.
Can you imagine? You find that one day it's in the kitchen, she's been washing up.
I can imagine, yeah, in my house I can.
What about yourself then, Simon? What stores have you liked and what have you picked up so far?
Well, I mean, I went to the Amy Bay store as well, picked up a few Amiga titles.
Yeah.
Quite cheap. Elvira 3 Waxworks I was quite proud of, mm-hmm. sort of grabbing hold of. Sensible Golf, Sensible Soccer, and Robin Hood. The Rockabilia store as well.
Right.
Which, I mean, I've known Tim for quite a while anyway. Yeah, that was about it, really. Bought a few issues of Crash magazine.
Oh, wow.
So,
It was nice on that store as well. He's got... it's obviously stock that was never sold during the 80s and early 90s of 8-bit games, and they're still sealed properly as you would have bought them back in the day, which is always... It's strange to see, because it's nice to get hold of that sort of stuff, but you also think it's weird that it's been, you know, laying around somewhere for all these years, not being played.
Right, I want to take this conversation a little bit different, because, like, again, I love seeing all the stuff out there displayed. I like seeing all the different systems, all the games. And normally, like, if I go to these events, I like spending a bit of cash on them, but this time I've been a bit more careful, because I've seen that you can get these things cheap now in certain car boot sales. I mean, I love my Mega Drive games, I love sort of like PS1, but I've seen it in car boot sales for so much cheaper, and that's what stopped me buying all these games, because it can be out there. Do you think that these shops are actually sort of like overpricing it now, because it is retros to collect now, basically?
Yeah, I think there is a bit of overpricing, and that's why I thought Amy Bay was refreshing, because you could have undercut them if you wanted to, and I didn't. I offered like £7 for one game and £7 for the other game.
Yeah,
and they were happy with that. What did you offer? A fiver each for the stuff you got?
Yeah, pretty much.
Which is not stop taking the mick too much, is it? But it's, at the same time, you're getting it for quite a good price.
I'm quite willing to throw in Sensible Soccer as well for nothing as well. So, but I've just sort of bought them a couple of quid.
Anyway. I still found that if you shopped around there was a couple of games that I bought that I managed to find cheaper just by looking at different stalls, you know. It was Pitfall 2, for example. One place was selling it for a tenner,
yeah,
for a fiver, it's half price, and there's, I can't remember the name of the seller, shop, stall, whatever you want to call it, but one of the bigger ones there was charging pretty much top whack for everything, and I'm not going to buy anything from them, because you know, you can get it cheaper elsewhere.
But it is nice sort of seeing these sort of sellers who sort of sell stuff on eBay, who have their own shops as well. It's nice to support them, but it's just the price sometimes. I think it's because retro gaming has become this collector's things now. People sort of up the prices for certain things now.
Even
at car
boot sales, I'm finding some people, they think, oh, it's slightly old, it's worth something.
Yeah.
Even if they've not checked the prices out on eBay, they're trying to charge more than what it's really worth.
It happens all the time on eBay. You'll get, especially during free listed days, you'll get a load of people, and someone said, oh, these old Spectrum games you've got, they're worth a fortune, and they want a tenner each for them. They're not worth it, not worth a quid, you know, some of them. And that's what annoys me, is that people just get greedy because they think they're onto something. But it's like record collectors will tell you the same thing. If you've got an old Elvis record, for instance, everyone thinks, well, that's got to be worth something, but if it's scratched, or if it's quite a mass produced one, or if it's a later edition, or It's not worth anything. People can't get that into their heads, you know. And it's the same with gaming.
Dean was saying, though, like, you were talking, you met someone yesterday, and he sort of has to have every single game on every single, you know, collection. Sort of, he has to have the, you know, American version, the Japanese version, the UK version.
He'll focus on a format and buy every game on that format. And that's not...
There's nothing wrong with that, but it's not you.
If he's got the money to do that and the space to want to do that, it's not my kind of collecting. I mean, I'll buy a game that I want to play, whereas I wouldn't buy a game just because it's on the Mega Drive. It could be, you know, you could be buying a really crap game.
Yeah.
And end up, sometimes these crap games are quite rare because they didn't sell as well, and you know, you end up paying through the nose for them, and you're not going to play it.
How do you do your collection then?
If I see a game I fancy and I've got the money, I'll pick it up.
What about yourself then, Darren? When you, same thing, how do you do your collection? Any random game, or just games that you used to have as kids and you want to own again?
It started off, we're talking about Spectrum days, it started off trying to get all the stuff I had as a kid. And then I thought, well, it'd be nice to have the rest of, like, the Ultimate games, for instance.
Yeah.
So let's see if I can get all the Ultimate games, and let's see if I can get all goes by imagine, and then before you know it, it's out of control.
Right.
And
did you manage to get them all, or mostly all of them?
I don't think I'll ever get all of anything.
Yeah.
But there are some rare goes. It's like the football manager, the Kevin Thomas game.
Right.
Now, that obviously most people had that at a Spectrum, but I've got one of the first editions on it with a really old cover, and it's
right.
like not mass produced.
Yeah.
And I paid about a tenner for that, which people might think is quite expensive.
Yeah.
But it's the way I say it, it's an investment, because it's always going to be a rare game.
Yeah.
And me and Si, we went down to, remember that one in Stevenage, a big box of Spectrum yeah. games, and I think it was about 40 quid, wasn't it?
We went 20 quid each on it.
Yeah, drove down there, picked up this big box of games and stuff, started going through it, and there was some really rare stuff in sort of hand-drawn covers and stuff. And there must have been, at the peak of these games being released, there must have been about 100, 150, 200
mm-hmm.
of them ever released. And you sold one of them for, what was it, pretty much 40 quid, wasn't it?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And I've still got two of these. People on World of Spectrum made offers, said, do you want to sell them?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, no, then. If people want them, I'm going to keep hold of them for a little
yeah.
while. So it's an investment in that sense. So if I know right. I need a quick 50 quid somewhere, I've always got that up my sleeve, you know.
Well, what about you yourself then, Simon? How do you collect? So I randomly choose, or again... Do the same as Darren?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I actually picked up an old Plus 2 off of a boot sale. It was about 3.5 years ago. I've got about 20 games with it, loads and loads of magazines, the complete input. And the Plus 2 was boxed. I paid just under a tenner.
Wow, that's fantastic, yeah.
And then I just started picking up all the games that I wanted. But the trouble is, like you say, once you've got all the games that you want, and you've picked up all the games you can feasibly pick up that are 50p a pound each, then of course it just goes up and up and up and up and up, and the space, I mean, the space it was taking up was unbelievable.
I can imagine.
Close to 800 games, 760 it was. Loads and loads of hardware and boxes of stuff everywhere, and in the end I just got rid of a lot of it, because it was just sitting there gathering dust, and it was just getting so out of control. So I stopped.
Oh, that is absolutely crazy. I want to move on to that, actually, that subject about having too much stuff. But I'll quickly tell you how I do my collecting. It's like, again, my favourite computer ever was the ZX Spectrum. And like originally what I wanted to do was get all the Codemaster games. But because my Spectrum doesn't work, well, I've got one that apparently does work, I might start collecting Spectrum games again. But I've been collecting for the Mega Drive, just games that I used to own, or arcade conversions, and that's the way I do it. PS1, I get them not necessarily because it's a system I really, really like, but it's just the games are really, really cheap. You can pick them up for about a pound here, a pound there. But I mean, when does collecting too much get too much? Because I've got all these systems already and they're taking up quite a lot of room in my shed, and I'm thinking, why am I actually collecting all these things? I don't really get to play them. I know it's nice to actually have them there, but isn't it just easier sort of just emulating them?
It is. I don't play any of the games I collect.
Really? Not at all? Do you not get them out and sort of load them up?
I mainly collect them because of the artwork and the extras and the physical.
Yeah.
Actually having the tangible game itself. And that's what collectors do, you know. They collect stuff and they won't use this stuff. Record collectors won't necessarily play the records
that they've got sealed in
cellophane and all that.
If my wife weren't so bossy and actually let me have my geeky stuff indoors, I would sort of like have my Mega Drive out, I would have my sort of N64 out, I would have my Spectrum out and play these things a lot more. I couldn't just have them there and not play them.
I've tried that, but it just takes so long to set up and load. You forget how long it takes to load a game. You're used to having a hard drive where it's just instant now. You click on it, your game's on, and I get fed up with waiting 10 minutes, and then it might not load properly, and then it's too much messing around.
There's another aspect to it as well, though. I mean, you've got a young child as well, haven't you? And if you're getting boxes out all over the place, and you've got tapes everywhere, and you're trying to load everything up, and so you know, the chances of something getting grabbed, thrown, dropped, stamped on in a tantrum, you know, the children are unpredictable. So I think it's a lot easier to keep stuff out of the way if you've got it until they hit a certain age, and just stick to the emulation part of it.
Yeah, myself, I'm quite lucky. I've got like a lock-up shed. I call it a shed, but it's actually a lock-up. That's my games room. So the kids are not allowed in there. Otherwise it would be havoc. Absolutely havoc. But, yeah, it's just... I mean, all my hardware, you know, the consoles and everything, everything is plugged in, ready to go. I've got them all hooked up to like a multi-block SCART, so I switch on that system, I press the button on the SCART block, away I go. The only thing, like you say, is loading times. I've only got one, like the ZX Spectrum, it's a 128K heatsink, and that I'm using my phone to load games up at the moment. And yeah, it's you know, you've got to wait a few minutes and see if they load. Yeah. You do still get tape loading errors, even though you're not using a tape. It does still bugger up sometimes.
But the other question I want to throw to you guys, because you guys have all got kids. Mm. What are your kids? Do you actually, have you ever let your kids play your actual old consoles and systems, or do you let them play the games on the actual sort of emulation systems, like on a PC or laptop?
To be honest, I don't, my daughter loves the Vectrex. She's played that and really enjoys it. Mindstorm, you know, built-in game. Yeah. She can play that and she understands it. Other games that she's played are more recent stuff on the modern consoles, like Driver.
Yeah, yeah. Test Driver.
Not Test Driver, no. no, just Driver. She obviously just don't understand the game, and she's only 7 years old. She likes running the people over, which is, you know, gives out all the wrong signals, I guess. But there you go.
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah.
No, my kids, my daughter's more interested in the older stuff. My son, he's 12 now, so he's got to that age where his mates have all got PS3s and Xbox, you know, 360s and all that, and they're even talking about PS4s now.
Yeah,
he's going to want one of them, and I don't think he's one of these kids who's going to look backwards and think. Yeah, it's just us with nostalgia, isn't it?
Definitely. I mean, that's why it appeals to us. It's stuff that we had when we was kids or wanted as kids. It's like, you know, I've got a five month old son, and I keep looking at him thinking, will he be a gamer? Will he be into my collection? You know, will he have an interest in it? And probably not. It'll be modern stuff at the time.
They might do if they get a bit older and appreciate the history a bit more, but you can't teach history of gaming to a 12-year-old because they're too young to appreciate it.
They either take to it, I guess, or they don't.
Well, with me, like, I want to quickly talk about this. Like, my little boy is 9 years old, and he's obsessed with Super Mario.
Mm.
And he's always like, oh, Dad, you know, have you played this Mario game? Have you played that? And I was like, well, have you played these? And I'm sort of like showing off to him.
Mm.
And he's like, how do you know about Mario 64? And I was like, well, I played it when it first came out on the N64. He's like, you first played it when it first came out? And I took him to my house, I showed him the N64 version, and he's used to playing the 3DS version. He couldn't quite get used to the controls. And what actually happened, it's just kids being kids. And I just said to him, it's like, Caleb, whatever you do, be careful with the wires.
Yes, he's not used to them.
He's not used to it because everything's wireless nowadays. And the next thing, you know, he sort of like got up, walked right in front of the sort of like the, you know, the joystick port thing, and the N64 went flying, and then it just, the screen went blank on the, you know, on the telly, and I was like, oh my god.
Oh gosh.
And I was completely just sort of like, I thought you'd destroy my N64, but luckily it worked because these machines are really durable back in the day.
Mm.
But I was moving slightly off topic, but my little boy loves the whole sort of like the history of Nintendo because he loves Mario. I've played him Super Mario Land, I've played him Donkey Kong, and he likes playing these games like that. And I think he is a little bit of a gamer at heart. That side of me has brushed off upon him. So I think, you know, he's always asking me to bring my old systems out.
With the consoles, it is, you know, both like Sega and Nintendo, they've got their mascots which go back quite a way. You know, the Sonic games were out on the Master System, so kids, if they're into those games, they can look back and see where the series came from. Whereas on the home computers, there isn't really any characters that are still, you know, like Monty Mole and all that.
Mm.
Them games have ended, the franchises have died over the years.
To say, what's the last time I heard Azul? That was so called Mega's mascot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't really take off as much. Should have done, really. Should have.
We've got one of our community members here. We've got Anthony, also known as Uni4X. Recently, we've had him on the podcast. Now, you've told us briefly, but why don't you tell our listeners once again how you found our website and how you became part of the community?
Yeah.
And by the way, cool T-shirt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you wanted to see this. It's the Manic Miner T-shirt.
Looks very good, doesn't it?
Yeah, our listeners probably can't see that, but it's one hell of a t-shirt.
What issue number was that? Sorry, podcast number?
Number 34. Right. But yeah, anyway, so how did you find us, Anthony? Like, exactly what episode?
I got a Nexus 7.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just basically looking around for things that I could do with it. And one of the things that I started doing was listening to podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I started listening to indie gaming podcasts at first.
Right.
And I thought, well, what else can I listen to? And I mm-hmm. thought, well, I'm really into retro stuff. Let's just type in retro, see what comes up. And you guys came up on the list, started listening, and been hooked on it ever since.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you actually really enjoy it. It's lovely getting feedback. And that's one of the things, actually, Dean, that I wanted to say, that I love coming to these events, meeting some of our listeners, because it's nice we can sort of, like, have a chat with them, you know, say thank you to them.
Yeah, it's always a bit weird. You know, last night we were sitting down and we had two or three people come up to us within the space of half an hour saying, Retro Asylum, I listen to your show, and they come and shake your hand. And
yeah, I mean,
it's a bit weird in that sense.
I think it's nice. I think what it does for me, it recharges my batteries, because I tell you what, podcasting on a weekly basis, and Foggy was saying that maybe we should go like bi-weekly with it, but for me, I need to get my retro geek out. I need to do this thing weekly because I really enjoy doing it. Outside of you guys, really, like at work and stuff, no one really knows about retro gaming, so I need to do it. And yesterday, I was feeling a little bit sort of like shattered, like, oh, it's hard work doing this podcast. And then what was it, TMC, one of our community members, came up to us. He's with his wife, his little boy, and he was just really positive about the show. You know, we did like this tournament, which it was a Sonic speedrun through the first level, and he was just saying it was something him and his whole family sort of sat down and did. And that really just started making me think, you know what, it's fun.
Yeah, it's a bit worthwhile, doesn't it, again?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So, yeah, what else I was going to say, talking about podcasts though, we've met loads of other different podcasts. We've met the guys from Retro Game and Roundup, Retro Colette, Nintendo Sushi, and they're all great podcasts, but they're all very varied because there's people from different age groups and they all do exactly what they do. You listen to Retro Gaming Roundup. How long have you been doing it, Darren, listening to them?
Oh, since it started, really.
Well, what is it about those guys that you like?
It's a generation thing. I think they're all sort of around my age, so I can identify most of the stuff, apart from when they get a bit too American for me. But most of the stuff I can identify with just because I was around at the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
With so many other podcasts, Nintendo-based ones,
yeah,
they were my going out and, you know, having a good time years, so I didn't really play the Mega Drive as much. So when people start banging on about that, it just goes over my head a little bit. I mean, I know roughly what they're talking about, but there's no...
Well, I mean, like me yesterday, I talked to all these other guys. We talked to Adam from Retro Collects, and they talk a lot about games like on the Mega Drive, especially the Mega Drive iFam, because that's what generation. I think they're about 26, 27 years old. And it's nice actually talking to them because they're so enthusiastic about that. But Adam came up to me and he said, like, we need to get you on our show because we actually want to talk about these sort of like earlier machines like the ZX Spectrum or the C64 because, you know, they don't really know that much about it because, you know, they're a lot younger. And it's nice. I was like, yeah, I'll be up for talking about that, to be honest with you.
Well, time flies, doesn't it? Before you know it, 10 years have gone and there's a whole backlog of people that don't know what you're talking about all of a sudden, or don't quite identify with the systems you use as much, you know. And it creeps up on you, that time thing, doesn't it? It just goes if you're not careful.
It's good that there's all these different podcasts out there though that suit different people.
Yeah,
you know, because retro is, you know, it depends on when you was born, you know, what you was into, what formats you've ended up going with. So yeah, with us, we do try and cover as much as we can. Myself, I'm like Darren, as in with the 16-bit consoles, I'm pretty vague. I know a lot of the games on there, but you know, I wasn't collecting at the time. I wasn't playing the games as much as I was, like, say, with my Amiga stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, when we have in-depth conversations about that, I do tend to switch off a bit because it's just not what I was into.
Yeah. Yeah.
Such as, like, my generation, it was more like 16 and 32-bit era.
Yeah.
It was a bit later on. It's like everybody says, it's an age thing.
Yeah, well, speaking to the guys from Nintendo Sushi, you know, so it's a great podcast, it's a fun podcast, they're really knowledgeable on what to do. I think they're about your age, Glenn.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, they've got that same sort of memory of gaming that you have, you know. And that's what I like about all these retro gaming podcasts. There is something for absolutely everyone, and they all do it really, really well. But I like to say it's like what we do as well. We've got like a like, wide range of people on our show who sort of like come from different generations of gaming. So I'd like to think we cover, you know, everyone. But again, I'd like to give a big special sort of shout out to Retro Gaming Roundup, Retro Collect, and Nintendo Sushi guys. So if you're retro gaming fans, give them a listen.
Dude, I just bought, I think it's somebody from Retro Collect.
Retro Collect,
it was such a good lad. He had a Commodore 64 in his hand, in his car, and I went, well done, good on you, lad.
Hello, Mr. Sid here. If you're after some retro gaming goodness, then you have come to the right place. From the Speccy to the Sega Master System, Capcom to Codemasters, and Space Invaders to Space Harrier, it's all covered in the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum.
We talked about this briefly last night, and what I want to talk about, and I know Darren keeps on changing his mind, so I'll ask you first of all, today, what is your favourite game ever, and why?
You can't ask me that question, it changes every hour.
This very minute, then.
Yesterday, it was kick-off two, because I was playing against Simon, and I beat him, was it 3-0, Simon?
3-0, yeah.
And I don't like sensible stuff, because he beat me on it, so, you know, but it's going to change again today, but it's always... Arcade, it's always Mr. Do, because I always like playing that.
Right, Tom, I don't know much about Mr. Do. Why do you like Mr. Do? Tell us, sell me on this game then.
It just caught me at the right moment, you know, and it was the one down my local kebab stroke chip shop, so that was the only one I had regular access to.
Yeah.
It was the one I got good at first. It was the one where there's some part in it, there's a diamond that appears, and if you get that, you get free credit.
Yeah.
That's always, like, really good to get. And, when you think of maze games, like Pac-Man, for instance, you've got a maze that's in stone, if you like, it's set. But the thing I liked about Mr. Do is you make your own maze by digging around, like Dig Dug. You know, you can make your own maze and influence where the monsters chase you, and you can drop things. It's just an excellent game, and I've never got tired of playing it, and I still play it a lot on MAME.
You've convinced me now. I think I need to check it out. I've seen it, I've heard of it, but I've never actually given it much time.
Well, they've got Mr. Do... over there.
I'll give it a go.
So yeah, definitely
give it a go. You can school us in it, basically. You can show us how you actually play it. So Glenn, I'll move on to you now then. What's your favourite game ever?
Oh, that is really hard. In my mind at the moment, it's Super Mario World, because I played it last night in Anthony's room.
Right.
We didn't get that far, did we?
No, we didn't. I mean, it was pretty late on, wasn't it? So we sparked up the retro duo.
Yeah.
I think you're sold on getting one of those cartridges, aren't you? So,
yeah, it has one of these cartridges, and what it does, it has like the top 100 games from IGN.
Yeah, they're what I put on it, yeah. And so I selected them.
Oh, it's amazing. I've got to get myself one of those.
But is Super Mario World then a game that you can keep on going back to? Is that why you like it so much?
Yeah, because it's its playability. Like, if you play through Super Mario World once, you could play it again and go a different way, like through the Star Worlds, and do completely different levels. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's probably sort of, I don't know, like one of the best Mario games ever. A lot of people go, say, Mario 64, a lot of people say Mario World, or even Mario 3, but it's a great game. What about yourself then, Dean? Favourite game ever? Double Dragon.
You're going to say that, and it is, I guess, but at times I get Double Dragon there. I've played the game too much, I really have.
Alright, so what else, apart from Double Dragon, would you say is...
I don't know, because there's so many games out there, you know, I go through phases. Back to School, great game.
Alright, Back to School then. Why Back to School then?
Because it was, I think, it's one of the very first sandbox games. You know, you've got, everyone knows about GTA, and you can run around, do anything you want. Well, you could do that back in 1986 with Back to School. You were running around a school doing whatever you wanted to do. You could catapult the teachers, you could hit your classmates, you could write on school boards, let stink bombs off, let frogs out in a girls' school. There was all sorts of varied gameplay options, and you didn't have to follow what you were supposed to do, like the Grand Theft Auto games.
Right.
You've got your missions that you're supposed to to do, but a lot of the time these games are more fun when you just mess around, and that's what you could do with Back to School. Plus you could change the entire school class, you know, it's all names, they all walked on. You could change the names, and you always use your old schoolmates. And, you know, if there was someone you didn't like, you made him, he might be the bully, and you just pick on him all throughout the game. That's a great game, and you can go back to that, and it plays differently each time you play. You know, it's totally random. Great game.
That's a great Simon, good game. I think I'll give it a go. What about yourself then, Simon?
You know the answer.
I know, that's the reason I was smiling when I said it, John Simon.
Castlevania Symphony of the Night, without a shadow of a doubt.
Sell it to Dean and to Foggy why you like this game.
It's huge. There's absolutely tons to do in it. It's got a tiny RPG element. It's difficult to sort of put into, you know, you can't really talk about it for 5 minutes or cover everything that it does. But it's got a secret area that's twice the size of that's exactly the same size as the original game. There are tons of bosses in it, tons of items. It's got special moves, magic. You can morph into a wolf, into mist. You can, I mean, it's probably the best Castlevania game ever, and it's probably one of Konami's finest games.
I completely agree. I think it's beautiful. So it's a work of art, the way I see it.
It is. I mean, it's a beautiful looking game. And there's so much variation in it, and the soundtrack as well. The soundtrack is absolutely superb.
It's haunting.
And there's some nice little rock tracks in it as well.
Oh, what about yourself then, Anthony? Like.
I think you can probably guess.
Go on.
Bubble Bobble.
Yeah,
I love it. But that another game that I remembered yesterday, Salamander in the arcades. I used to love that game. Brilliant shoot 'em up. And you get to a certain level and you actually start scrolling vertically as well as horizontally. Right, it's quite varied gameplay. So that's another one of my favourites as well.
I mean, me personally, I would go for Street Fighter 2. I mean, it's very close to Symphony of the Night, but because Simon's picked that, I'm definitely going for Street Fighter 2. I think that is like the chess when it comes to sort of like beat 'em up, one-on-one beat 'em up games. There's a counter move for every counter move. The graphics are beautifully animated. The music's so memorable.
And ripped off.
Yeah, ripped off the music from Top Gun. But I just love it. For me, it's just like one of the best beat 'em ups. Combinations hadn't been done like that before ever. And I think the game has evolved up to Street Fighter 4, but I'm glad they kept the same sort of formula. I mean, I did find it a little bit annoying that they kept releasing sort of Turbo Edition, sort of Super Street Fighter 2. They milked it for everything.
Well, it was probably the biggest arcade hit since Pac-Man, really, wasn't it? Yeah, it was everywhere. And Space Invaders, you know, those sort of games. It was...
Well, you've brought up the subject there, Dean, then.
Yeah.
What was the biggest, most iconic game earlier on that was all over your arcade, then?
It depends on the times. I mean, obviously, Space Invaders and Pac-Man, early hits, you know, they were everywhere. Later on, in the later 80s, Double Dragon was pretty big. And then the biggest one after that has to be Street Fighter. And all the different versions of it, it was everywhere. You know, every chip shop you went into, there was a Street Fighter 2 machine. Every arcade. Yeah, that's probably the biggest one. After that, you had Mortal Kombat, which a lot of people were playing, but it didn't have the last ability of Street Fighter.
Pac-Man was massive.
Absolutely.
Pac-Man massive. In 81, 82. Yeah. It was everything. Yeah. Everywhere. There was posters, there was... pencil cases, there was books, there was do you remember them daily boppers that they were like things you put in your head?
Alright.
With the two
alien
things. On
spring.
Yeah, Pac-Man one of them as well. And there was a cartoon Pac-Man, wasn't
there? Yeah.
And that's gotta be
long.
Well no, and it was a bit politically incorrect the nickname. But again, if you've got a video game and they made a cartoon of it, it might have been the first way around that was
back
done.
Then, you know, this was before Mario had his own cartoon. So, yeah, it was big. There was also a cartoon of Pitfall.
Was it?
Yeah.
I did not know about this.
It aired in Europe.
There was Pole Position as well.
Yeah, Pole Position, although it had very little...
Nothing to do with the game.
Was that the one with the
sort of spies? Yeah, it was a licensing job by Namco.
Right.
It was related to the game. It was just... it didn't seem to have anything in common with the actual game itself.
I want to ask Glenn the same question, Glenn. What was popular around the arcades for you when you were growing up? Because you're like a lot younger than us.
We were getting into the 90s then, and it was like Daytona USA, it was like Sega Rally, virtual racing, and Ridge Racer. You know, it was more the 3D games were starting to come out around that time.
It's the last sort of arcades.
It was nine days of it, really.
The last
PlayStation come and killed them all off.
But the main game I really liked was mainly Ridge Racer and Sega Rally. Those are the games I played really the most at the arcades, and nearly every arcade had them.
Yeah.
Now, there was this place near Filer called Primrose Valley, and they had, like, a load of arcade machines, and even they had the old ones as well, like Pac-Man and stuff. But around that time, you didn't come across as many as you probably would, like, in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm. Was you put off by the price of playing these games? You know, they suddenly become a pound a go.
Yeah,
whereas
50p. They were normally about 50p to a pound by then. But, you know, like, the older arcade machines upstairs, like Pac-Man was 10 pence.
Yeah.
So when I spent a lot of money on the Sega Rally and a Ridge Race, I used to go, oh, I have 10p left, have a go on Pac-Man.
See, I would have a go at Virtual Racer, but because it was so expensive to play, I'd have one go, and if I didn't get anywhere with it, that was it, I wouldn't return.
How much were arcades back then? Weren't it just like 20p?
It was 10p. 10p,
well,
yeah,
10p.
I remember when the first time I saw Dragon's Lair, and that was 50p, and I thought, bloody hell, for one go? That's madness. But
You don't last long, do you?
Well, I didn't know.
Not quick enough.
It was over before I thought it began, it was over.
You mentioned a good point about Dragon's Lair. Like, now, Dragon's Lair completely wowed me. I mean, I playing the game itself, I'm not a big fan of it. It kind of reminds me of those quick time events that you get in modern game. I was talking to someone about it. Yeah, like Shenmue. But even like in Resident Evil 4, you've got these time events where you press the button in a direction. But at the time, I hadn't seen anything like that in the arcade. It looked beautiful.
There wasn't anything like that before, though.
Yeah, there's nothing. It was a Don Bluth who used to do some. He was like an animator that worked at Disney, and he ended up doing Never. No, it was like this.
But around that time, they started to get into sort of real video. Because of the laser disc thing, because you had
I was mentioning this last night, wasn't I? There was one that was like a fighter jet.
Yeah,
it was Lock-On or something.
Yeah,
it might be. Yeah.
Firefox as well, which I played a lot back in the day, which was based on the Clint Eastwood film, weren't it? Firefox.
Yeah.
Brilliant game.
Yeah. Right, I'll throw this out to you guys. There's one thing that I want to find out what it was called. I don't remember. But I saw this at Margate. I saw Dragon's Lair, and in Margate they also had this machine. It was kind of like the Star Wars thing with the Princess Leia. It was like a little container thing, and it had like this hologram of this character, and it was a game.
I remember seeing, I can't remember what it's called.
What was it?
I'm pretty sure that was the early 90s.
Was it?
Yeah, I think it was.
Was this a Sega game? I think it was called Colosseum.
Really?
Oh, it was
a hologram.
Yeah, I saw it. I never played it.
Yeah, I'd like to sort of like see what it actually played like. It sort of like blew my mind back in the day, you know, just like playing Dragon's Lair. I didn't know what I was doing, but seeing this, I just didn't know what
to do. But they never followed these things up, because I thought that would be like the virtual reality machine we went on yesterday.
Yeah.
I thought that would be all over the place by now, and it's just not, you know, it's just like a fad, wouldn't it?
You know, as you say, how good could that be these days with modern style graphics in that environment?
And it is. The game we played yesterday wasn't very good because it was like an early 90s.
Had you played it? Had you played like a virtual reality game before, Darren? So, never. You went in this with open eyes. Yeah. What was your first impression once putting the headset on?
I thought it would be a bit claustrophobic or something. I think it wasn't. It was alright. And I was quite conscious of how you look when you're playing. No one looks good playing these things.
Bothered me.
That passed after about a minute or whatever. But I was just remember thinking that if they could modernise this and have a Call of Duty or a Grand Theft Auto with the headset and everything like that, it'd be fantastic.
Well, we joked around. We said that you look like that thing from Red Dwarf.
Yeah, the coronal socket.
That's a reality. It's like, that's a coronal socket.
Yeah.
So, did you actually ever play one of these back in the day? So you played it as well.
No, I never played it before. When I was like a kid, when I first saw these things, and back in the 90s, this is the future. Mm-hmm. This is what it's going to be like. And even the special edition of computer video games, they had like a book, and at the very end of the book, what's our prediction for the future? I said, I think people would be wearing virtual helmets. Never happened, did it? Mm-hmm. But I think people thought that was the future back then, but I think because it was the cost of it, and the cost of equipment, and like you say, Andy, some people get emotion sickness from it.
Because I used to work in the Trocadero, and they had, at the time, they had like a virtual reality headset you could put on, and we got free access to all the machines. And I saw this, and I thought, well, it's the next big thing. I'll give it a go. And I really suffered from motion sickness, and that's what's put me off ever playing this. And I didn't even dare play it yesterday, this festival. I couldn't play it for that reason, but
Some people are like that with first person shooters, though. Mm. They just can't do them because they just feel sick. Got a couple of mates like that.
Did you feel anything?
No.
No, really. I didn't. I felt perfectly fine getting from it. I actually did enjoy playing it. Mm-hmm. But another thing is, I didn't realise that the guy was behind me. Yeah. The guy with the gun, it's no warning he was behind me. Was there any warning? Because I didn't notice any warning.
I didn't know whether I was supposed to shoot the dragon thing or the guy with the gun or where I was supposed to go. It wasn't really explained to me what I was supposed to do, so I was just like wandering around, experiencing.
The only warning I got is when the dragon's coming, said the dragon's coming, and I'm like, where is he? And then suddenly I've been picked up and thrown around the course.
But you're right, a game like this, done properly now with a good budget, would go down really, really, really well, you know?
Yeah.
Did anyone actually try the Virtual Boy, which actually was down there, which was one of Nintendo's biggest flops ever?
I might try it today if it's still there.
Yeah.
I think I will do as well, just to sort of like, I've seen them like in magazines, but I've never picked one up and actually given it a go, so I'm curious.
I've only
to try
seen
that.
Them once in a shop, but I think they were selling it for about 300-400 quid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, was it never released over here?
Not officially, no.
No, I thought it was.
I thought Steve Benway said it wasn't
that
released here.
Of a flop that
well, they didn't.
Yeah.
Maybe that tested the market and people thought, well, let's not invest money on virtual reality, it's obviously not working. But you'd think with the price of electronics and technology now, they could do it fairly cheaply, couldn't they?
Mm.
Yeah.
It would cost a lot of money.
What would you look at iPhones, like, if you would have done this back in years and years ago, this would be like thousands upon thousands of pounds, but now these are like getting it 100-odd quid now.
It's like you said, technology improves. Yeah. Like, okay, I'm not a big fan of 3D movies, but like now they film it and do it on a... They do it completely different way. People don't get that much motion sickness. They put a budget behind it, so I'd love to see like a whole new sort of like 3D sort of game out there.
I think it'll have
a virtual reality, I should say.
Hello everybody, this is Damien and you're listening to Retro Asylum, the best retro gaming podcast.
Is there any systems out there that you've sort of had an interest in while you was a child or growing up and you've seen and you're still interested in?
Well, me, I want to get that Philips video pack thing, the Odyssey, and Glenn looked at it and he said that it looked like a child's toy.
Do any
of you guys have any sort of like player or have one at all?
I remember the advert for a game called Crazy Chase and I remember it being out.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, the Atari was out at the time.
Yeah.
And, That was much more appealing because it had arcade ports, and I think that's what sold the Atari more than anything. It's just the Space Invaders, Asteroids, Pac-Man. You know, that's what you'd pay good money to play these games. So that's where the Philips and maybe the Intellivision and things like that, they sort of failed because people wanted
arcade. Atari definitely dominated, didn't it?
Yeah. Good marketing, but in the end, their marketing turned rubbish on them. I mean, there was... Victims of their own success really got a bit blasé, I think.
Like me yesterday, I picked up a game, Bug, and I thought, God, I remember this game was being released on the Sega Saturn, but I never played it. But I remember seeing it and thinking, do you know what? I have a fond memory of seeing this game, and I bought it. Have you ever bought a game thinking, I've seen this game before, somewhere in the past, I like to experience it on my system? I never ever had it.
I think for me, I had. Possibly more on the PS1 because again we were talking earlier on off before we started recording about certain times of podcast. Well, when you're retro gaming, when you had a lull in gaming due to real life, going out clubbing and so on, and like I had the PS1 because it was the latest machine. I've always been a gamer, and there's so many games I wanted to play which I never played back in the day. And it was not until a good sort of 6 years afterwards, once these games started going a lot cheaper, I started getting them, like Soul Reaver, Legacy of Kain. I remember seeing it in magazines, people going on about how amazing it was, how, you know, like, it was better than Tomb Raider, the animation, and I just thought, okay, saw it cheap, picked it up, and it was a Tomb Raider beta, you know, I think it was Crystal Dynamics that did it.
Yeah.
And it did something really clever with the loading times because it carried on spinning, so there was no loading time every time you went into a new room. It just ran off the disc perfectly, and that was an example that I'd seen it in a magazine and got it a few years later because I had that memory and it made me get it. So basically, anyone else?
Jet Set Radio Was it Jet Set Radio?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I think that was on running on PS3, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's the HD version.
Because I've always wanted to get that.
It looked lovely on
the screen. So I might try and get hold of that somehow.
Yeah, I played it on the Dreamcast originally. I found it very hard control-wise.
Yeah.
You've got to like, spin the stick to do the graffiti and all that. Good game.
Yeah, it looks really good. I've always wanted to play it. Yeah.
All right, we talked about this on the forum then. Like, favourite controllers and why then?
So coming from a computer background, you had different sorts of joysticks. I think I had a Competition Pro with the micro switching.
Mm-hmm.
There was stuff, you know, I remember on the Spectrum, Amstrad was making, what were they called, SJS joysticks. They were really cheap and nasty.
Yeah.
I used to avoid anything like that, so Competition Pro for Spectrums and Commodore 64s. As for consoles, I don't know, I'm pretty happy with a standard PlayStation controller.
What about yourself then, Glenn?
For me, I like the Super Nintendo pad.
Mm.
I just love the way it's set out. The buttons are nice, simple to get out. Like, the problem with a lot of modern consoles, they have like buttons everywhere, and sometimes in games it might get slightly confusing. But the Super Nintendo just has the right amount of buttons. It placed them nicely on the pad. But and I think for that, me, that's the best
that
pad.
That might be a generational thing, because I want to ask the same question to everyone else here, but for me, I loved, I can't remember what it was called, is it a Quick Fire on the ZX Spectrum?
Quick Shot.
It was a really solid joystick, and playing games like Daley Thompson's Decathlon, Track and Field, Jeff Cape Strongman, the joystick wouldn't break. And then I started playing sort of like consoles like the Master System, where it was a bit fiddly, it's a bit too square, very little in your hand. Now, you mentioned the Super Nintendo. Don't get me wrong, I like the design of it, but it took me ages to get used to sort of the L and R buttons here. Because I was used to just playing with one button.
See, what I like, it's nicely placed. It's not
I find it too small, though. It's too small on the hands.
So just, do you find when you pick up the Jaguar pad, it's a bit more awkward? It's a bit, you hold it like, your hands out a little bit. Mm. Such as Super Nintendo, it's nicely in your hand.
I don't know, I think, personally, the Mega Drive control pad, the six-button ones, I thought that was really nicely designed. It fitted into your hand nicely, and it worked well for certain games. What about yourself, Simon? What's your favourite control pad or joystick?
I would probably say the Power Play Cruiser.
What's that one?
It was, I think they actually had one. They've got one at the fair, but it was a horrible green pastely sort of thing. But it was absolutely brilliant sports game. Sensible soccer. And
you could adjust the movement anything on the stick as well.
Yeah.
By twisting that.
That was it. So you got the two buttons on the side, and you could smash it left or right. It'd last for ages. It weren't flimsy. It was just really sturdy and
good. Oh, I have to check that out. Well, should we go back in? What about yourself then, Darren?
Probably the Atari 2600. Bog standard joystick.
Right.
It's always the right size for me.
Mm-hmm.
It sits in the palm of my hand perfectly.
Yeah.
It's pretty much a design classic, isn't it? You know, it's an iconic sort of joystick, and they never break well. I've never known one to break.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I didn't get on with joypads, because the fire button, it was on the left on the joystick. And
all of a sudden, your
fire buttons are on the right hand side.
This is probably a generational thing, but I always found the joysticks very. It doesn't move, usually. It only moves very, very slightly.
It depends what joystick you had, though, Glenn. I mean, if you had a really good one, it worked really, really well. Because, like, I don't know who I was talking to in the actual expo down there, but there was these grey Spectrum joysticks, and I find them so fiddly. I'd be playing certain games,
SJS ones,
and then they would just snap. Honestly, I was playing a game, and the thing came out. It was just really cheaply made, but if you had a good joystick, it worked fantastically.
I might got the name wrong, but are they, like, did they call them cheater ones? The ones that are very cheaply made.
The cheaters,
Because Steve Benway reviewed one and said these are awful, and I have one myself and agree with him. When you touch it,
they get a bit loose, and they feel really light in the palm of your hand. Like, not well made, but that's why I like the Atari one, because it just feels solid still.
I think the good thing about the Atari one was there was no plastic rubbing on plastic, whereas with the cheater ones, that's what they were prone for. The stick went right down to the base, and it rubbed on the plastic on plastic.
You get loads of dust, plastic dust all around it.
Good. So let's get another conversation then. It's like, okay, we're going to go back to the expo in a little bit. What games would you... do you want more than anything out there? If you could find it, what game is it you want? I'll start with Dean again.
Oh. You always put me on the spot, don't you?
Oh, come back to you.
Yeah, come back to me. All right,
Anthony, what game, if you could get any game that you haven't got that you want to add to your collection, why is do you want this game?
Well, I think like many people here, I'd probably just prefer to have a full-on name cabinet and anything I can in it.
Slightly cheating.
But I would love to have it's probably Salamander, yeah, I'd love to play it. Yeah, have that in my house and have a good...
What about yourself, Phil?
Shoot them ups.
Completely predictable answer, a complete PAL special edition version of Castlevania Symphony of the Night with the art book and the music CD.
Yeah. Darren?
Oh, I haven't got any holy grails at the moment, but...
yeah,
I can't think of one.
It's probably be some Atari 2600 stuff that I haven't got, games-wise, or some Spectrum stuff. I'm trying to desperately find some games by Automata, and that's why I'd be interested in viewing Mel Croucher.
Hopefully we should get them on the interview, guys, sometime soon.
They're quite difficult. Some of the games are quite difficult to get hold of, but... I doubt if I see any of them for cheap, anyway.
Yeah, okay, same question to Glenn. And then Dean, then I'll go back to me. You stuck, Glenn?
Yeah, because the games I was looking for, I actually found them the other day.
Right.
I thought, why not buy them? But
maybe that's the generation thing, because you're younger, so they're more out there than the older ones.
With me, I was probably with Jet Set Radio, because I was looking at it yesterday and thinking, I remember seeing that on the Dreamcast for the time. I'd like to have a go at that, actually, on the Dreamcast. So I was that close actually getting that as well. I might pick it up today. I'd probably say Jet Set Radio.
What about yourself then, Dean?
Well, I've been thinking about it, and I've been quite lucky. Recently, I've picked up a lot of games that I've been wanting to get for a long time. I've picked up the NES version of Popeye.
Yeah.
I'd still like to get the Atari 2600 version, because that's the version I had.
Yeah, beautiful game. Job.
Yeah. But that plays really well on the NES. Big fan of the arcade game.
Yeah.
Again, Pitfall 2, I've managed to pick that up this weekend.
Yeah.
What else, really? It's hard to say. I would like to pick up the first two Double Dragon games on the NES.
Yeah.
And yet, I've not really been into the NES that long.
Mm-hmm.
I won't be buying lots of games for it, because they're still quite expensive.
Yeah. I mean, for what I would say, Dean, for me, I'm going to go to PS1. I would have to say Silent Hill, because everyone raved on about how amazing Resident Evil was, but for me, Silent Hill was creepy, it had atmosphere, and for once in the game, it really scared me, whereas Resident Evil was like, I expected a zombie to be around the corner, I expected some crazy thing, but Silent Hill, it played mind games where you didn't know what was going on. It was just something, it's basically, I think people compare it to Jacob's Ladder, that film.
Yeah.
It's some of the streets are named off, I think, characters from that film, I think, or whatever. Right. But it's a great game, and I think
with Silent Hill, it was, everyone compares it to Resident Evil, and for me, Resident Evil had such cheesy acting.
Yeah,
I couldn't take it seriously as a horror.
No, but I love it for that. I've gone off topic there, but I love Resident Evil for the cheesiness. It's like a B movie.
Has it stopped?
No, it's still recording, mate. Right. Yeah, don't worry. It's just recording really low.
Yeah, I just want to,
Alright, so we got any more questions before we round this up? It's a little bit all over the place today, but like I said, I'll edit it, put some music into it, and then...
I don't know if anyone's asked this before I came. Is there a system today in there they have not got opportunity to play on, but you want to play on it today?
System?
Like, you walk past it, and you think, I might have a go at that, but I haven't got time because I'm going to go and have a drink, or... hang out with the guys,
To be honest with you, it's a Street Fighter 2 for me. I just love the whole look and feel of the machine. I love the sound. I'll always have that memory of sort of like walking into arcade and hearing the Hadoukens, hearing the music in the background, seeing people crowd around the arcade machines challenging each other. It was like a winner stays on sort of thing. So,
I'll get to put this out there. If money and space wasn't a problem, what would you have out of there today?
Console
or arcade, whatever.
I would have one of those turnaround arcade ones, the main cabinets, that's four players, I think. Yeah. I'd love to have one of those. That would be the ultimate dream, to have like a prop, something that played absolutely everything, and I could just sit there, have a couple of mates over, the wife permitting. That would be the dream. I don't know where I'd put it, but that's a dream, to have like a big massive arcade that plays everything.
Oh, that'd be a sell like that.
What about yourself?
I think I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit of a cop-out, though. Yeah. But, yeah, some of the pinball tables I might hit today, and give them a go, because, you know, they're not the kind of thing you can emulate, really.
You know what? I think you're right. I've never been a big pinball fan, but you know what? The older I'm getting, for some reason, I want to be drawn in, I'm getting drawn into them. I don't know what it is. So I might join you in that. I might actually give pinball a game.
Some of them a go.
Yeah.
There's a nice Defender arcade machine down there. I always
love
that.
One thing I love to play today is that Ridge Racer, the sit-down version, because I've not played that for some time. For some reason, over the years, they've been disappearing from the arcades. They used to be all over the place, but never seem to find them anymore. So today I'm definitely going to play Ridge Racer, the sit-down version.
All right, we'll do that. So I'll tell you what, guys, I think we'll start running this out because we're sort of like all retroed out. Yeah, so everyone, any shout-outs you'd like to say to anyone, Dean, starting from you, again, picking on you?
Yeah, all the guys on YouTube who I follow, Long Boys Post, Steve Bingway, those sort of people, Retro Gaming Roundup, Retro Collects, Nintendo Sushi, all good. Yeah.
What about you, Glenn, any special shout-outs, many mentions?
Well, I'd like to say thank you for everybody who listens to us and everybody that came up to us and gives us our full support, because without your support, you know, it keeps us going, you know, it's a really, really good thing, and it's a really nice community, the retro game community.
All right, what about yourself then, Foggy?
Same, really, everyone on the forums and everyone who said hello over the weekend.
Yeah. So. Simon?
Yeah, I'll go along with that, yeah. Everyone here as well, because it's my first event, and it's been absolutely fantastic. I enjoyed every minute of it, and meeting you guys as well, it's been great.
Anthony?
Yeah, just thanks to you guys for putting this podcast together. If I hadn't found it, I wouldn't have been here today, probably.
Yeah.
So it's been brilliant to meet you all. I really like speaking to Dirk Diggler. Really looking forward to his podcast. And it was great to meet Matt as well, because we've got a lot in common with the Amigas.
Yeah, me, I'd like to sort of thanks Chris Wilkins for actually putting this sort of event together. Yeah. I've really enjoyed it. It really brings back all the good old days, all the different arcade machines, consoles and everything. I'd like to thank the Retro Asylum team here, our listeners as well. You guys keep me going, you know, it's nice talking about these things. Keep me sane, because, you know, it gets my geek out that way. So, yeah, guys, thank you very much. Don't forget to leave us an iTunes review. It really helps us a long way. Tell your friends and family about it, and keep on listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
See ya.
Bye.
Right. also recalled me phoning up the concierge to come up when I've got the toilet.
Alright, so that's a count of three. 3, 2, 1.
Who wants to take over now then, guys? Go on, first question. Dean, on the spot.
On the spot.
Yes.
Oh, blimey, you have to put me on the spot.
Yeah. I mean, okay, I'll go and... Oop. Glenn's calling, so guys, continue to do this while I quickly talk to Glenn, and I'm not going to edit this out, this is going to be part of the podcast.
Where are you, Glenn?
Hello, Glenn, where are you, Glenn? Alright then, we're recording the podcast right now, so like, this is going to be during the podcast, so we'll see you in a little bit. Give me a call when you get here, mate. Yeah, because I think out time's 11 o'clock in the hotel, so... We thought we might as well record it ASAP before, you know, we get kicked out of the hotel. Alright, not great for our listeners. See you in about 10 minutes.
I think you'll have to edit that.
Yeah. Ah, really? No, just leave it all in.
I thought that's going to be a long gap.
Don't worry about it, I will edit it, but I mean, like, I'll make it seamless anyway, so... Alright, next thing's up then, like, what are the questions then? Like, about the shops...
I had my
I suppose it's like discovering music from the 60s and 70s.
Right, so we'll just take a short break, take a seat as we're actually recording, and I'll get back onto what I was doing. Glenn, you want to sit there in the middle?
Okay, sorry about that.
It's alright.
I'll turn my phone off.
Go on, so you can sit over there, sit there in the middle. Yeah, so yeah, what I was saying then basically.